Hello and welcome to the programme which looks at the Holy Land. I am Paul Calvert. Psalm 34 verse 1 from the New King James Bible says this, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth.
I'm with Rafi Bloom from Northwest Friends of Israel. Now Rafi, when was Northwest Friends of Israel started and why?
Northwest Friends of Israel was started back in 2014 during Operation Protective Edge, Suk Eitan, the conflict that happened between Israel and Hamas in the summer of 2014. And what happened was that there was a Jewish-owned shop in Manchester city centre called Kedem that was selling Dead Sea products. And the BDS, the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement, decided to try and close that shop by intimidating the staff and customers and protesting outside that shop, which was located on the most prestigious shopping street in Manchester city centre, on a daily basis. And when some of us in the Jewish community found out that this was going on, we said, not on our watch. This is happening 2 miles away from where the vast majority of Jewish people live in Manchester. And so we mobilized activists, we mobilized the community to organize daily counter demonstrations, to liaise with Greater Manchester Police, with the local authority, and to try to put pressure on them to remove these anti-Semitic protesters, and at the same time ensure that we had counter demonstrations and a presence on the street on a daily basis. And that happened for 6 weeks, and that was the beginning of Northwest Friends of Israel.
So what sort of people are in your group, in your organisation?
We're probably the largest pro-Israel grassroots organisation in the UK. And we probably have around 3,000 members. And when I say members, I don't mean people that pay subscriptions, but people that follow us, that support us, that come to our events. And they're drawn from across the Jewish and non-Jewish communities of Greater Manchester and the Northwest. So we have people who support us from the Jewish community. We have incredible Christian supporters who come along to our counter demonstrations and to our vigils and to our rallies and who engage with us and amplify and magnify our message on social media. And we also get support from Iranians living in Manchester who are opposed to the genocidal Tehran regime, and also people from the Kurdish community who want to stand alongside the Jewish community in Israel.
Is there a good relationship between the Jewish community and the Christian community?
Yes, absolutely. What I would say is that the Jewish community of Greater Manchester, certainly for the last 200 years almost, have played a huge role in helping Manchester to become the great city that it is. They've contributed in the fields of social welfare, of politics, of commerce, of the arts. And we're very proud to be Mancunians, and we've always aimed and strived to get along with our Christian neighbours, and we do.
Now, you advocate for Israel. Has that become more difficult since October the 7th?
It's never been easy to advocate for Israel in a world where you have a group of people constantly calling for the demolition and the destruction of Israel and the driving of Israeli Jews into the sea. What we've seen since October the 7th is an amplification and an increasing level of cooperation between what I would call this unholy alliance of the far left and the far right Islamists. And so that's made our job more intense. It's made our job busier. But we'll never stop advocating for Israel because we're on the side of right and the right of Jews to have self-determination in their ancestral homeland.
Now, many people say that Israel is committing genocide. How do you answer something like that on the street when someone comes up to you and says, oh, they're killing all the children?
Jews know what genocide is. We've experienced genocide. What's going on in Gaza is not genocide. And if you look at on the very simple level, if you look at the Palestinian population of Gaza and the West Bank in 1967, it was approximately 650,000. If you look at the population of Gaza and the West Bank in 2024, it's approximately 5.4 million. That's not a genocide. And if you look at the casualty figures in Gaza compared to other modern urban warfare theatres, the casualty figures, even if you take the Hamas figures as fact, which I don't, but even if you do, if you take 40,000 dead and you take the IDF figures of 17,000 combatants killed, it's roughly, you know, 1-to-1, maybe slightly more than 1-to-1. And the UN state that in modern urban warfare conflicts, the average ratio is for every 1 combatant killed, there's 9 civilians killed. So on any level, Israel is not committing genocide in Gaza. It goes out of its way to minimize civilian casualties. Of course, every civilian death is a tragedy, and nobody should die, and no children and women and innocent men should die. But we have to lay the blame for those deaths at the door of Hamas for starting this, for beginning this on October the 7th. But going back to the claim of genocide, it's absolutely not a genocide. Genocide is the systematic eradication of a race or a religion or a people. If Israel wanted to commit genocide in Gaza, it would have killed far more people. It would have stopped aid coming in. It wouldn't have given the warnings that it does for civilians to move from upcoming conflict zones. So it's an absolute lie. And those are the messages that we convey on the street.
Of course, as well, Israel isn't fighting another country. They're fighting a terrorist organization who don't play by the rules as well, aren't they?
They are, and they're fighting a terrorist organization who constantly refuse ceasefire deals, and at the same time have invested probably billions of dollars in building a terror infrastructure underneath the homes of the civilians of Gaza, but then have used those same homes as the entry and exit points for that subterranean terror network and as arms dumps and firing points. So it's a very, very complicated, war zone, but it's definitely not genocide.
Now, you fight anti-Semitism. Has anti-Semitism gone up in the UK? And do Jews feel safe? And what sort of things do you do to fight anti-Semitism?
Since October the 7th, recently released figures from CST, the Community Security Trust, which operates to safeguard the Jewish community in this country. And before I go into the figures, I think it's worth reminding listeners that the Jewish community in the UK is the only community that has to have 24-hour guards and gates around its synagogues, its schools, and its communal organizations. And that should tell you initially everything that you need to know about the type of Jew hatred that we face in this country. However, since October the 7th, we've seen over a 110% at least increase in the levels of anti-Semitism towards the Jewish community. A large proportion of that, interestingly enough, and scarily, happened in the immediate aftermath of October the 7th, before Israel and the IDF had even begun to respond properly, and certainly before the ground offensive happened. And what that tells us is that that spike in Jew hatred was from people celebrating the murder and the butchery of October the 7th. And it's made many Jews feel very unsafe in this country, very unsure of their future, in the same way that it did when we thought Jeremy Corbyn might become Prime Minister. In fact, I would say it's probably made people feel more unsafe because with Corbyn, we understood that there would potentially be a Prime Minister who was an anti-Semite and who would shift the tone of the way that the Jewish community in this country was dealt with, and certainly with relations with regards to Israel. What we've seen now since October the 7th is widespread delegitimization both of Israel and of the Jewish community here, especially in terms of the way that the word and Zionist has been used by the far left and the Islamist extremism on the right to denigrate anybody that believes that Israel has a right to exist. And those people, which make up the overwhelming majority of the Jewish community in this country, 72% of Jews in this country have a family member living in Israel, and the overwhelming majority of this community are Zionists. It means that we are being attacked on all sides. We also feel very unsure because we have seen over the last 10 months an absolute two-tier policing system take effect. We had people in the immediate aftermath of October the 7th out on the streets of cities across the UK, glorifying the resistance, glorifying the butchery and murder of October the 7th, praising it, supporting Hamas, which is illegal, and no action was taken against these people. We see sermons every Friday from mosques up and down the country that are zoomed, so you can watch them online, calling Jews usurpers and Zionists evil and sons of monkeys, and no action is taken. And then when we have far-right riots, which were disgraceful, that occurred several weeks ago, we see people being arrested for the smallest offense. And so from our perspective, yes, the Jewish community feels under attack from all sides for all the reasons I've just elaborated on.
Jews hiding their Jewishness at the moment, not wearing kippah or anything like that.
It's a really good question. In the aftermath of October the 7th, There is no doubt that people hid their Jewishness. So, my wife, for example, has a necklace around her neck with her name in Hebrew, and she would often tuck that into a top if she was at the gym or going shopping. I know people who painted over the mezuzot, the scrolls that every Jewish home has on their doorposts, painted them over black so the home wouldn't be identifiable as Jewish. I mean, this isn't Nazi Germany in the 1930s. This is Great Britain in 2024. And so people were definitely hiding their Jewishness because they were afraid, and people are still nervous and afraid. But I think what I've seen over the last 10 months, and certainly in the last 2 or 3 months, is a shift from people. And certainly the way that I look at it personally is that we're not going to be intimidated. As I mentioned earlier, we're proud Brits, we're proud Mancunians, this is our city. And to paraphrase Menachem Begin, the former Prime Minister of Israel, in a closed session of the Senate Appropriations Committee in 1982, when he was being castigated and chastised by a certain Senator Joe Biden. And he turned around to Joe Biden and he said, "Senator Biden," he said, "I am not a Jew with trembling knees anymore." That's the message that I take out. And that's what many people are saying. We are not Jews with trembling knees anymore. You can attack us, you can denigrate us, you can try and exclude us from public spaces, you can call for the destruction of the State of Israel and the genocide of the Jews. But we're not going to stand for it. We're going to stand up for you, whether that's one of us, five of us, 500 of us, or 5,000 of us. We're not going to take it. And so people are fighting back, absolutely.
Well, how big is the BDS in the UK?
London has often been called the capital of the BDS movement. And it's interesting with BDS because BDS is a movement that is obviously, of course, inherently anti-Semitic. I mean, the interesting hypocrisy of the BDS movement, and this is probably similar of many people who support it, is that Omar Barghouti, who's the founder of the BDS movement, was educated at I believe, at Tel Aviv University. And of course, the BDS movement is hypocritical. I mean, we see them going around smashing up branches of Barclays Bank because they might invest in some companies that have some interests in Israel. We see them trying to shut down British airspace because British airspace manufacture some parts for the F-35 fighter jet under contract to the Americans. They try and put pressure on companies that have investments in pension funds that might invest in Israel. And they're trying to put pressure, for example, now on Teva, which is the Israeli pharmaceutical company that supply 1 in 7 drugs to the NHS and supply some life-saving drugs for dementia, for MS, and for cancer. Of course, these people will never give up their mobile phones and other devices that run on Israeli developed technology. And of course, there's a lot of hypocrisy around it. It's a very noisy movement. But what I would say is that whether it's effective from an economic perspective, I think is very doubtful. They occasionally will have a few wins, but overwhelmingly, I think they don't. And even when they claim to have wins, if you dig a bit deeper, it all turns out to be built on lies. As one example, I'll give you, they claim that they've been running a campaign to get Manchester Metropolitan University, which is the second largest university in Manchester, to switch its banking from Barclays, who they say are complicit in genocide, which is a load of rubbish, because of that claim. Manchester Met announced that they were switching from Barclays to Lloyds. The BDS movement claimed it was as a result of their action. But if you actually dig a bit deeper, you can find minutes of meetings of the Board of Governors of Manchester Met University that said they took this decision back in November before this BDS campaign even started. And it was part of a review of their banking facilities. And they looked at 6 banks to change. It had nothing to do with the BDS movement. So even when they do claim successes, it's really important to look at them because often they're just lying.
Does BDS actually damage Palestinian lives?
I think BDS absolutely damages Palestinian lives. I think that we know how many Palestinians work in Israel. That might have been reduced since October the 7th for security reasons, but before that, absolutely, there were hundreds of thousands of Palestinians working in Israel every month. We know that there are businesses that operate in the West Bank that employ Jews and Palestinians. And of course, the most famous case of example of this was SodaStream, who had a thriving factory in the West Bank employing Palestinians and Jews. It was a beacon of coexistence. The BDS movement attacked it. The factory had to close down. They relocated to the south of Israel. And of course, they've employed Israeli Arabs who live in the south of Israel, the Bedouin community, Christians, and indeed there are still a few Palestinians who did make the journey every day to work there. But hundreds of Palestinians lost their jobs because of the BDS movement. So the BDS movement is a sinister movement who are at their core anti-Semitic.
What do you actually do to counter BDS?
First of all, we call out their hypocrisy, we call out their lies, we explain that the claims that they're making to their supporters and to the wider public, actually, because you're never really going to change the views of their hardcore supporters, but the claims that they're making to the wider public around a certain business and their alleged involvement in Israel sometimes is not true, and sometimes is actually going to affect the lives of Brits. Teva provide generic low-cost drugs to the NHS. It's one of the largest suppliers of drugs and medicine to the NHS. If the BDS movement damaged Teva, that's going to cost the lives of British citizens. And it's really important that we call that out. It's important that we show people that the claims the BDS make about Israel being an apartheid state and are lies. And it's important that we counter them where we need to so that they don't put pressure and engage in both economic and criminal damage to businesses that often are doing a lot of good in the world and are also protecting British lives and Britain as a country.
What is your prayer, your hope for British Jews in the UK?
It's a really difficult time for us, as I said earlier, but the community is rallying, it's coming together. We have a huge amount of support from the Christian community, which we're very, very grateful for. And my hope is that we continue to thrive here. This has been our home for centuries. And as I said, we're proud to contribute to Britain and certainly from where I'm sitting in Manchester to the great city that Manchester is. And we'll continue to do that. We'll stand up to Jew hatred wherever we find it. We'll call it out. We'll expose it. We'll expose the people that are engaged in it. But I certainly want a future here for my grandchildren in 20, 30, and 40 years' time. But we've got a challenge on our hands. We see what's going on university campuses up and down the country, and those places have become a very intimidating and toxic space for Jewish students. And we have to act against that. The government has to take action against that. The universities have to be firmer in their approach to this. It's all very well claiming it's free speech, but universities and the government have a duty of care to ensure safe spaces for Jewish students as well. NHS hospitals have the same a duty of care. And so what we need is we need action from the government, from local authorities, from public service bodies to ensure that Jewish people don't feel intimidated when they go to university or they seek treatment at the hospital from staff who are wearing Free Palestine badges or kefirs or from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Because Jewish people are scared that they will be discriminated against, they won't be treated correctly. So we need that action. We need firmer action on that level. But ultimately, we're not going anywhere. And that's my message to those who hate us and those who wish to marginalize us because we are Zionists, because we support the right of Israel to exist, because we support the right of Jews to have self-determination in their ancestral homeland. Zionism is not just a political movement. It's something that Jews have been praying for millennia. Pick up any Jewish prayer book, read the Bible, take part in the festival of Passover or the festival of Hanukkah. And it's all about Jerusalem, Zion, the land of Israel. This has been going on for millennia. Yes, it's a political movement, but it's also part, an inherent part of our religion. And Jews are a race and a religion. We are a people and a religion. And we're not going to be marginalized for believing that, just like any other people in the world, we have a right to self-determination. And we'll continue to fight for that.
For the Jewish students, what sort of things have they encountered going to university?
They've encountered what we call tentifada encampments. So huge encampments of tents set up on university campuses, banners, Palestinian flags, chants from the river to the sea, opposition to the Jewish societies and Israel societies holding events, the importation onto campus of extremist speakers and extremist elements from outside the student body to rile and whip up pro-Palestinian students. And it makes Jewish students scared to identify as being Jewish. It makes them scared to stand up for Israel. They've faced intimidation in lectures from lecturers who have come in wearing Palestinian paraphernalia, pro-Palestinian paraphernalia, who have sort of hijacked their own lectures to convey a very one-sided, biased, and untruthful narrative of the events post October the 7th, and indeed of the formation of the State of Israel and before that. And it's made people very, very scared and intimidated.
What's your website for people who'd like to know more about the work that you do?
So you can follow us on social media, NWFOI, Northwest FOI on X, Northwest NWFOI on Facebook, find us on Instagram, nwfoi.org.uk on the web. Northwest Friends of Israel engages in Israel advocacy on a number of different levels. We hold weekly hostage vigils in the city centre of Manchester on a Sunday. We've been doing that every week since November, so that we can continue to highlight the plight of the hostages being held in the terror tunnels of Gaza by Hamas. And interestingly enough, we get overwhelming support from the vast majority of Mancunians who walk by and engage with our placards and our leaflets. And that is really heartwarming. And we organise regular counter demonstrations to the anti-Israel, anti-Semitic hate marches that come through Manchester city centre on a Saturday afternoon. We organise rallies in support of Israel. We're very active on social media. We organise advocacy sessions so people can understand better the arguments and the issues around the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and be better educated so that they can engage in conversations in the workplace and online with a greater degree of confidence. We are engaged with other sort of advocacy organisations and Jewish establishment organisations to magnify and amplify the case for Israel, and to highlight the challenges that Israel face and the battle that it faces against Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran, and also to call out anti-Semitism and Jew hatred in the UK, wherever we see that, whether that's in the arts, in the media, in sport, or wherever it takes place.
Well, Rafi, thank you very much for sharing today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me, and thank you to all your listeners for your incredible support of Israel and of the Jewish community in the UK. You know, we are blessed to have you. We thank you for your support. We know we're not alone, and that means a huge amount to the Jewish people. And so once again, as we say in Israel, Toda rabah.
Thank you for joining us today. Pray that God will move by his mighty power in the Holy Land and bring his peace.